Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. This week, Seth Greenberg and Dan Dockage are recapping the Sweet 16 and Elite Eight and previewing the Final Four. Keep an eye on that feed Sunday morning as the guys will be cracking the mics early to look back on the Final Four and to preview Monday night's national championship game. Listen to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, America's Caddy on ESPN Plus is hosted by my man Michael Collins, the quick-witted longtime caddy, comedian, and ESPN golf analyst as he interviews the biggest stars in the game. America's Caddy is part travelogue, part golf history lesson, and part celebrity hangout, but full of laughs, streaming now on ESPN Plus. The Right Time is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. It's that time of week where we have a guest joining us, coming to us live from Connecticut. A man sitting there, he got a hairline all the way down to his glasses, his eyebrows. His name is Michael Smith. Mike, what's going on?
What's up, Maxwell? Meanwhile, you looking like an R&B singer. Can't talk about my hairline no more, man. Not since you didn't grown it out and moisturize it with juices and berries. You can't talk about my hairline. You are disqualified. You could talk about my hairline, Bomani, when you were transitioning on your way to, as you say, going home.
Yes.
Okay? And then even then, you had the perfectly connected goatee. Like, your goatee is always connected.
Yes.
Okay? So even then, but I let you slide for all this time talking about my hairline, but now that you got this luxurious hairstyle going, okay, I don't think you should be able to mention my hairline no more, because, like, well, what about what you got going? Like, you don't even need a hairline at this point.
I mean, it's cool, but at the same time, I keep from crying because I just can't let it show. You know what I'm saying? Like I just can't. I'm not there, you know? All the things that I said that I never meant, you know?
Perfect.
What can I say?
I feel like D-Wade throwing a no-look Allen in LeBron just now. I got my arms outstretched. It's just like, that's what I already know what he's going to do with that. Offline, we need to talk about, or we can talk about it online, but I ain't trying to do that to you. But we should talk about how life has improved, shall we say, since you took on this hairstyle.
Well, I can tell
you,
it's only improved so much because I'm still at the damn house, right? So, like it only does that. But I tell you this about Maxwell, man. My girlfriend in college, Maxwell was her dude, right? Like, that's what she was all about. And she was all into dudes that had, like, wild hair all over the place and everything else, right? Yeah. And that was not me. Like, that was her thing. She first met me. She was like, I can't even believe I like you because you don't even, like, get down like that. I'm all right, whatever. So then, at some point, she got a Maxwell poster, and it was this Maxwell poster, and it's him, and the shot cuts, like, right at his shoulders, and he got no shirt on, and he got this, like, kind of, I don't know what the word is for the face, but it's this real delicate-looking face that he's making, and it would be staring, like, right at her bed, like, it was to the side, so, like, her bed is perpendicular to one wall, and then on the wall, if you make a 90-degree turn, it's Maxwell right there. And it's just like, we'd be laying in bed and Maxwell would just be looking at us. And I'm like, why are you looking at me like this? And then every now and then you want to be like, yo, why are you looking at him like that? You know what I'm saying? I'm right here.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing worse would have been if you'd have had the Maxwell poster looking at you. Meanwhile, how does it feel?
Yes.
On the box.
A loop.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, actually, I think the only thing that would have been worse, if she was at the point of the college experience still in that twin bed life. That's what it would have been the worst. Like, if I was laid up in the shoebox and then I got to look up at Maxwell, like, you know, I got a king size bed over here, baby.
You just flash back because at Loyola, man, and this was in what was then the new residence hall, I could never figure out how to configure my furniture because, like, there was this bed, but it had the dresser underneath the bed. And even if you took the dresser underneath the bed was still kind of high.
Uh-huh.
It was a bunk bed, but it wasn't a bunk bed. Am I making sense?
Yes.
Yeah, it just wasn't quite comfortable. So you always had to climb up on the bed.
Yes.
You know, and it just was weird.
Yeah, because that was like for storage reasons that they did that. Because my dorm, when I moved to the new spot, the bed was also like way up there. Like it was the same sort of situation. But luckily, We all knew the deal. That decision had been made long before entry.
True that. Right? And it was not contingent upon your furniture.
No, and she needed a boost to get up to the bed in her room too, right? Like, yo, you live two floors down. You ain't about to judge me.
When you're in college, that's the least of your concerns. You don't even need privacy, honestly.
Yeah, you're just glad your mom isn't there anymore. Exactly. That's all it is, man.
I was watching the NAACP awards the other night when Maxwell came on. Dude ain't aged a bit, but it's been 25 years since Urban Hang Suite, man. You ever be listening to like Sirius XM radio or something like that? And it'll be like, old school. And then like Tony from like, you know, yes. Loving You will come on like, that ain't old. Like, wait, am I old?
Oh, it's so old. Like, think about this, right? Okay, so you did that 25-year math, right? So 25 years since Urban Hang Suite. 25 years before that, Superstition hadn't even come out.
Wow.
Yes, Superstition hadn't even come out yet.
Mind blown. Yeah.
Yeah, like when you do the math like that, you start thinking about like what some of this music has to sound like to the kids. Like the oldie station, like not the dusty station. You know, the dusty station got the stuff your parents would listen to. But like the oldie station when we was kids, like, you know, the do run, 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 the do run, run. Dog, the songs wasn't really that old when we was listening to them. Like, at this point of where we're at, so think about this. Run DMC's Raising Hell came out 35 years ago. What was the music sounding like 35 years before that?
Before that.
35 years before that is Sam Cooke is still singing like Cupid.
Yeah.
That's what our music sound like to these kids because it's been that long.
I guess I just haven't come to grips with the fact that we old.
Yeah.
I haven't made peace with that yet, but I guess we are. Every morning, I'm literally lecturing my son about his cell phone. I'm telling my daughter, my 14-year-old, I'm like, I was 14 once. She's like, I really don't like when you say that. I was like, why not? I was 14 once. I wasn't a 14-year-old girl. And I didn't have a cell phone, but I was 14 once. The stuff that I say that sounds just like my people now is incredible.
Well, what hit me on realizing, oh, so we're doing the book club like we do every year.
Oh, yeah,
reminding
everybody
the book is Kane Mutiny, How Miami Overturned the College Football Establishment by Bruce Feldman. But a big part of why I'm doing this is I was talking to our guy, Andrew Cooper, right? Mm-hmm. And I was talking to him about Miami, and I was just talking about it like he was ubiquitous, right? Like, I was just like, yeah, you know, and then you had what went on with Miami, and he was just like, what was it with Miami? Like, this dude is wildly informed and knows a bunch of stuff. And I was like, oh, wait a minute. There's a generation that has no idea of what 80s college football was. Mm-hmm. And even like the 30 for 30s that were about it, they're 10 years old. The first run of 30 for 30s was 2009.
Oh my God.
ESPN was founded in 1979 and it was 30 years from there. So they're 12 years ago.
And you think about how old they were, they wouldn't have been watching that. They would have to make an effort to go back and research. That's research for them.
Like the U came out 12 years ago. If they were to see, did you ever watch Pony Excess, the one about SMU?
SMU, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that came out the night Cam Newton won the Heisman, if I'm not mistaken. It was either that year or the next year, but it was after the Heisman.
Dude.
You see what I'm saying? I felt really old, even though this dude is not young anymore, watching the Kevin Durant back and forth with Michael Rappaport, because I'm just like, oh, come on, young fella.
I'm telling you, what is he, 32, 31, 32?
Yeah, that sounds about right. He graduated high school in 06. He should be 33 this year.
Let's do this math. I love this quick math you're doing, and I'm going to try to keep up. What I said to myself when I first saw this back and forth was, well, you know, I don't want to get too, you know, holier than now, because when I was Kevin Durant's age, I was probably doing the same thing. But when I was Kevin Durant's age, there was no Twitter. so that's how old we are.
Except that's not true. Kevin Durant is 33 years old.
But wait a second. Hold on. So that's 8 years. Oh, my God. There was Twitter.
Yeah. In the age thing, I think Kevin Durant exists in an interesting space. And it's a lot of guys like this. So, like, think about this. When
did Twitter come out? Twitter was 09?
07. Twitter came out 07.
Oh, that's right. I got on in 09. That's why. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I think it's so recent. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Twitter came out 07. Oh, yeah. No, there was definitely Twitter when I was 33 years old.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But so when Josh Smith was judging the dunk contest in Atlanta.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to my brother. My brother's like, yo, Josh Smith isn't really like an elder statesman. I'm like, Josh Smith got drafted 17 years ago. These guys in this current time, and especially the ones that came in out of high school, we never think of them as grown. Even LeBron, like, we talk about it so much that he's in year 18, but it doesn't feel like it. Like, I remember when Kareem was in year 18. I don't remember it very well, but I remember it. But it was like Kareem was old. Like, there was no way around that. And nobody took care of their body better than Kareem, all of that stuff. But Kareem was old. Like, year 18, there wasn't that many dudes who'd played 18 years as recently as, like, 15 years ago.
Well, you know what? It's not just their play. It's their style. It's how they conduct themselves. And I will say this. I don't think I'm going to screw this point up. I think the difference in us at 33 versus them at 33 is they've grown up in this era. Like, like, this is who they are. This is how they dress. This is how they tweet. This is all they've really known for the most part is what I'm getting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
no,
they were introduced to this at a very young age. Like,
they're native to it.
Exactly. Twitter for us, it's social media for us, is still a relatively new thing that we can do with or without. This defines them.
Yes.
And going back to my son, you know, my son is 12, begged me for an iPhone. I got to be mindful of, like, TikTok and Snapchat and all the things that he wants to play around with, how that can manipulate him and his identity at such a young age. He could become so dependent upon those things in a way that, even though at one point, you know, we lived on social media, we could always cut it off. It's all they know. They're native to it, like you said.
Did you watch The Social Dilemma?
It's on my watch list. And you told me to watch it, and I still ain't got around to watching that.
Man, look, the two most telling things about that. Number one is that all the people who were in it and built these social networks all say they don't let their kids on them. Number one. Number two, they made a great point. The only two industries that refer to their customers or the people they deal with as users, drugs and them. They're the only ones. And, you know, like, that's what got me. Like, I don't know how you're supposed to do it, especially you can't just go to the, well, if all your friends are jumping off a bridge, would you jump off a bridge? That's the terrain that they traffic on. That's where they are. That's where they live. That's where life is for them. That's why they don't ever go outside and everything else, because they can get everything. Well, I mean, a lot like the rest of us, you know what I'm saying? They can get everything right in these machines, and it's probably terrible for them.
Yeah.
Like, I can't imagine trying to develop, you say, your self-esteem and your self-concept with everybody out here lying.
Pretty much.
Right? It's a branding thing, right? Everybody's Instagram page is their own brand as much as anything else. Twitter's a little bit different, but Instagram in particular, brand, man.
You never really mess with Instagram for that reason, right? You're much more active on Twitter than you are on Instagram.
Yeah, I ain't even that active on Twitter anymore, to be perfectly honest. But on Instagram for me was always branding. Like, Twitter to a degree, but Instagram, I was like, okay, let me show y'all how I live so you can see I kick it like you kick it. That was what I was pushing. And then it got a little farther along, and A, I wasn't exactly kicking it like they kicked it no more. So that was that part. And then number two, I just, like, I don't really want to be a part of this economy. Like, I don't even really want to be on Instagram looking at people's stuff anymore, because I just don't feel like, I'm not saying that people are full on being dishonest. Like, some people absolutely are being dishonest because they just want to show people a certain thing, and not just like they want to show people they balling, but they just want to show people they okay even when they miserable.
Yeah,
you know. And so I it's hard for me to trust what anybody's given. And this is the big thing that got me with Instagram, and I'm curious your thoughts on this. You and I both produce content for a living. That's what we do. Making content is not easy. I feel often when I'm on Instagram and even Twitter to a lesser extent, but I feel like what it's got to be like for a dude in the NBA to just go watch people play pickup. You're like, man, these fools can't play, right? You know what I'm saying? Like this dude might have been the best player at his high school or whatever, but man, this dude can't play. And that's what I feel when I see all the things that people put up there. Like, I want to stop and be like, so what made you think this was interesting?
Right.
Like, what made you think anybody gave a damn that you and your friends went out to get burgers?
Right.
Not even a picture of them. Just a picture of y'all clicking the glasses. Why do you think anybody else cares about this? Because like, maybe somebody does. Like, I mean, literally, why do you want somebody to see this? Oh, really? You went out to eat with your friends and you had drinks.
Yeah.
For what?
I think it goes back to what we just talked about, is so many people, and I know that at one point there was some discussion about whether or not they were going to remove the like count or something like that. I think so many people derive their self-esteem, their self-worth, their value from the response that they get on social media.
Yeah.
So, okay, show that I just watched. It's been out for a while, but I just watched it. Have you ever watched I May Destroy You?
No.
Oh, man. That's good. HBO Max, I May Destroy You. 12 episodes, one season. without giving too much away, there's a part where the main character becomes like a basically a social media sensation. And there's a part where she's like really at one of her lowest points. And I thought this was one of the realest scenes of the entire series, full of real scenes. One of the realest shows I've ever seen. It is not my experience, and yet I just can sense the authenticity in it. She's at one of her lowest points. She forces a smile, takes a selfie, and then just revels in the, I love you, thank you for what you're doing, all the feedback, all the comments. And literally, it's this shot of endorphin. It's just this, she immediately is picked up by it. And I thought that was so profound. And I think that's probably what a lot of it is that nowadays it's become the experience. I mean, not just that, Bo, but think about how many people are at concerts now or at shows now with their phones out, you know, not just recording it for themselves to relive it later on, or at the club. Like, I haven't been to the club in a long time, but whenever I go on social media and I see somebody that does the little photo shoot at the club, I'm like, are there people around you when this is happening? And what does that look like when somebody sees you with the camera doing your thing with the phone, capturing you and your crew? It's like, I just think right now it's become to a point where social media is just so ubiquitous, and so people are so native to it that the experience for them of going out, of hanging out, of a concert, of just living life isn't complete without memorializing it on social media, sharing it, and getting the feedback from other people to show them their highlight film, like you talked about.
Yeah, well, I realized too, because I've done that before again, because I was trying to give people like what it's like to kick it with Bomani Jones, right? Like, you mm-hmm. know, like I was trying to give people that stuff.
But that sounds like that's more just like, that's strategy though.
Yeah,
that's
it
like,
is.
That's like more
it,
work.
Yeah, it is, but like the lines are blurry, you know yeah. what I mean? But like that was how, so I used to go to concerts and like record a little clip so I could send it to the people. Or like, I went to a Prince concert in Vegas in 2013 and I tweeted out the set list, which actually was valuable because I could go back and check what the set list was, like, because yeah. I hashtagged it. But I realized, like, at one concert I went to where I just looked around and was like, nobody's watching this show.
Yeah.
Everybody's on their phone. And I was like, I'm changing my whole steez up yeah. on how I do this. I'm not worried that much about getting a picture because I was here. Right. Like I was here. I was there. Like, the memory going to have to be sufficient yeah. to an extent. But I went to Chicago to see Beyonce on the Formation tour.
Mm-hmm.
And I just looked around and I saw everybody just had their phones out all the time. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, yo, this isn't it. It's standing on chairs so they could do this. But the thing that got me was I was like, yo, these videos are terrible. Like, this is nothing you're going to go back and watch. This is nothing that you're going to be able to get any good sound off of, like any of this stuff. And like, it's just to show people that you was there. And I was like, nah, I don't want to kick it like that. And so like, I got real big on this now, like going to concerts and stuff, like, nope, not on the phone.
And being present.
Yeah, like I'm going to be here for these sorts of things. Like, I don't know if you've been to any of them Chappelle events where you got to put your phone in the pouch.
No. Have you been to one of those?
So I went to a Chris Rock show where they did that.
Yeah.
And I went to one of those Chappelle like jam session type joints at the All-Star game. When it was
that. Okay. I'm thinking about some of the recent ones. Yeah, you told me about that. Yeah.
But the thing about that was, after like in the first couple minutes, you like jittery, like you don't realize how much you like. But then after that, I was like, oh, this is the bomb.
Yeah.
Like, I am not always part of the world or feeling the need to respond to somebody immediately.
The only time I've done that, and I probably should do it more, the only time I've really put my phone aside was when I was mandated to. So, you know, at the Aspen seminars, I've done four of them mm-hmm. for the Aspen Leadership Institute, the Henry Crown Fellowship. You're in these seminars at this round table for 8-10 hours out the day, give or take. And there are breaks throughout the day, but while you're in session, you got to put your phone in the phone tree. And at first it's like, oh, and these are people, and listen, it's, I mean, me, I ain't, what do I need my phone for? I'm surrounded by CEOs and CFOs and CMOs. Everybody in there got companies. So they actually have reason to want to be on their phone, business reasons. And yet all of us just was like, this is refreshing. And it's so funny we talking about this, man. It is so funny we talking about this. Because literally this morning, my son, without getting into too much detail and putting his 12-year-old business in the street, my wife didn't like some of the stuff that she came across on his phone. So we took his phone from him this morning. And again, he's 12 and he just wore us down. He shouldn't have a phone at 12 years old anyway, but he wore us down and we gave him the phone. And he was like, well, what am I going to do at lunch? I'm like, eat. He was like, but everybody at lunch is on their phone. I'm like, really? I'm like, so all of y'all are at school together in person in a pandemic, mind you, and y'all are all on y'all phones doing what? Is that where we are now, where even children are all looking down at their phones yeah. when they're in each other's presence, when we used to just play pitch up tackle or some why y'all ain't playing?
or look at that girls.
You know what I'm saying?
How about that? Although I guess the problem then becomes he's like, but the ones in the phone.
maybe that's what it is.
they look a little different. I don't know. Like, it's all thrown off. And so like we started on this with Kevin Durant. And you know what I thought about when I saw Kevin Durant and all that stuff he said to him? It was something that you said to me. I don't even know if you remember this many years ago, right? And it was about going back and forth with people on Twitter. You told me, you were like, you ain't trying to be there for long. I'm like, that's right. I'm here for the one hitter quitter, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not here to have a long back and forth with you. Yeah. Like, if we doing this, I'm trying to wrap this up right now. Durant in his thing with Michael Rapaport, who is so unlikable that honestly, the most likable, I hear he's got some show on Netflix about autism. I don't know anything about that. But in the things that I have seen, time he played a sex offender on SVU, that's Michael Rapaport. Like, that's his get down. I can't imagine doing all this screaming at Michael Rapaport over like an interview or whatever it was. But with Durant is like, you will not take away my right to clap back at people on the internet. Whether or not this makes him happy is a completely different discussion. He just refused. I got a buddy once, I remember he was talking to me about something that happened with his now wife, and she did something, and it was like, I don't know if I should be mad about this. And I was like, well, if you're not, ride it out. And his response was, I will not let her take away my right to be mad. And she wasn't even trying to take it. He just couldn't decide whether or not he should have been mad. And so Durant's like, hey, man, all these people hit me up. I get to go back at some of them. And sometimes I think there's something to it, right? Because there's no telling who he will or won't respond to at a given point of time. You have no idea who it's going to be. It might be somebody who matters. It might be somebody who doesn't. He'll go back at some point. But what became clear to me is he reads everything that everybody says about him. Like, there are all kinds of filters that you can put in to like weed out the bots, weed out, you know, all of that stuff. And I admit I will go around those at times because sometimes it gets away from like actual good stuff because of the standards that you have to put in. But I don't have nearly as many people hitting me up as Kevin Durant. And I don't have nearly as many people calling me a punk or a buster or anything else, right? All the things they call Kevin Durant. I don't have nearly as many of those. No. And that dude just clearly sits there and takes all of that stuff in. And I can't tell, like, if he all the way cares, all the way does it doesn't feel like there's any in between. But I just can't imagine having these levels of back and forth that he's having with people. And I just can't see how that's healthy.
Well, that's the key word for me, because you're absolutely right. And it's like, far be it from either one of us, you and I, you know, for different reasons, at different levels, at different points, have had plenty of people talk to us. We've gotten into back and forth. This is not going to be the pot calling the kettle black.
Right.
I've spent plenty of time going back and forth with people that I shouldn't have. And that's the thing for me is time. It's to the point now where I'm genuinely concerned for Kevin Durant. I don't mean that in a paternalistic or even a patronizing way. I'm really concerned because, like, dude, you're wasting time. And I'm speaking from experience when I say that. I wish I could have all the time back. Some of the back and forth can be constructive. And in a moment, it may feel good. I just need to know what it is that makes Kevin Durant feel good. Because at this point, it ain't about trying to take away his right to clap back. But if you want to do it once in a while, that's one thing, player. Like, bro, are you living on social media enough? Because if he's spending this much time with Michael Rapaport going back and forth, and you add that with the amount of time that people have screen grabbed his responses, it stands to reason that the time he's actually spending not only reading what people are saying about him, not only replying to some of these people, but processing and thinking about and giving his energy to these people is exponentially greater than what we even know. I'm like, KD, why do you need it? Why do you need it to this extent? To where it clearly bothers you enough to where you're literally going back and forth with people whose opinions you're never going to change, who are never going to see you any different. I worry about that. And I don't worry about it in terms of his mental health, because clearly he's healthy. I worry about it is that he doesn't know how much time he's wasting. And maybe he doesn't want to do anything else. Maybe he just wants to hoop and tweet. All right, cool. Maybe that's all you want to do. But I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of time that he's wasting and there is no end game to this. Like, what is his end game? What is he trying to accomplish Like, where is this going to go? So you go back and forth with Michael Rapaport. You really going to fight him?
Right.
Y'all really going to scrap?
Yeah, you really going to show up on the street and scrap it out with him?
You know, you're going back and forth with these dudes on Twitter about, like, they're saying that you can't lead a team. You going to convince them otherwise by tweeting them?
Yeah.
You going to rationalize with them? Let me ask you this question. When it comes to serious matters of whether it's race, gender, class, I love to know this because you're as good a communicator as I know. How many people would you say you've converted over the years?
I would say I actually have converted. I think I've converted a lot, but I think I converted people who were in like no man's land.
Who could be converted.
Yes, yes. I do not think that I converted the people. I would use the people talking crazy to me to convert people in the middle
yes.
by putting those other people on stage. Because there is some well-meaning person who's like, but I don't understand why we can't use the N-word if you use it in rap, right? And so I take the dummy, make the point, and then let that person lay silently. Yes. But I have not converted the dummy.
That's all I'm getting at. So he's going at it with dummies that it's like, okay, so what did you just accomplish? I love this conversation that we're having because this entire conversation, start to finish, has been two old dudes.
Yes, that's who we are.
So maybe it's two old dudes that just don't get it. I'm just like, bro, like.
I just hope it makes you happy because it doesn't look like it does. Like, that's my thing when I look at it. And Durant, look, he's got to be going through it this year because that hamstring injury, I ain't never heard of nobody having so many damn MRIs on a hamstring and what this is. And quiet as it's kept, he looked the same on offense when he came back, but he can't guard anybody anymore. Like, he's not the same player that he was before the Achilles, which is no judgment because it's the most devastating injury that you can have in sports. And we both know this from covering sports for a long time. It don't feel good to a dude like Kevin Durant to have your team keep winning without you. It makes you question your own value and what you are providing when these dudes, like, you happy that they winning, but it does make you look like y'all don't need me. Like, say what you want about the Warriors. You say he joined a super team or whatever. No, he joined a team that needed him. Mm-hmm. They absolutely needed him.
And the moment he joined the team, he was the best player on the team.
Yes, but they needed him.
Yeah.
It's fair to ask whether or not the Nets need him. And whether you agree with me or not about that fact, I assure you it has crossed Kevin Durant's mind while he's holed up.
If it didn't cross his mind, here's the bad part. He's ready.
Yeah,
like, and that's the worst part about social media is like whether you know it or not, you are subconsciously internalizing the shit that they're putting in front of you. I hear what you're saying, and I'm sure it's not great. First of all, he loves to play basketball, and I'm sure it's not great. The injury is frustrating. Secondly, you're right. To watch James Harden play at the MVP level, to watch them win without him, two things can be true at the same time. You could be happy for them and rooting for them, and still feel like, man, they're doing pretty good without your boy. That's not a great feeling.
Yeah.
The only thing I would say, though, is if this were some kind of a recent thing, he's always been like this.
Well, there's always been a thing.
And I thought that the championships would have taken him to a certain place mentally where he didn't need to go back and forth. It's almost like, dude, you forgot you won two championships. Like, what's he searching for?
But it didn't go the way he thought. Like, I have seen with my own eyes, not talking about me personally, but I've seen with my own eyes somebody achieving their wildest dreams, everything they ever wanted. It didn't hit like they thought it would. Like, you know, and Durant thought, I'm going to get these championships. They're going to say I'm the best player in the world, so forth and so on. And it just didn't land like he thought it would. And that's rough, man.
But the problem is, and I'm with you on it, and I get that. The problem is if he is navigating his career, if, I don't know, I'm no psychologist, but if he's navigating his career in the hopes of quieting the critics and thinking that he's going to plot some kind of a course that's going to get him that adulation you're talking about, that, oh, I'm going to do this and they're going to say this, then he's going to be wandering for the rest of his career looking for that. Like, there's nothing he can do. The only thing he could have done is stay in Oklahoma City and won it in Oklahoma City. And maybe even then somebody would have said, well, you know, Russ was the best player on the team. Who the hell knows? If he went to Golden State and he thought it was going to go any differently than it did, then why'd you go in the first place? Like, you go there, you win the championships, you went to play with them. You got to find a way in life, and specifically to Kevin Durant, to be happy doing what you do because it's what you do and you want to do it, not happy depending on what they say. So now you go to Brooklyn. If you think you're going to get the credit for Brooklyn, like you just said, they're doing well without you. You got another thing coming. He ain't getting the credit for Brooklyn either at this point.
Nah. He is the best player ever to not have a hive. Dragonfly Jones makes that point all the time, but it's the dead truth. Like, for example, there's no question about this. rest in peace, but Kevin Durant's a better basketball player than Kobe Bryant was. The strongest argument that you got is like a narrative rings sort of argument and like the toughness lead the way. But just as a basketball player.
Hold on.
Kevin Durant, hold on. No, I'm not holding on.
No, I do need you to hold on. I need you to hold on. And not because I need you to hold on because I wasn't ready for that. But you know,
I don't think it's close.
No, but you know, I'm not ready for all that. You know how sometimes somebody will say something that you weren't
probably close. Yeah.
You know how somebody will say something that you weren't prepared for? I just wasn't prepared for that.
Yeah.
So I need a second. You're probably right. I just need a second to like digest that.
Okay. But while you're taking your second, my point is this. There's people that'll fight you to the death about this stuff. I had some guy got his Twitter account, and he'd been killing me and Pablo because we said Tim Duncan was a better player than Kobe. And this dude was telling me what a terrible, vile, like parasitic sort of person that I was on the basis of this one, because that's how people ride for Kobe.
Yeah.
Nobody rides for Kevin Durant like that.
Yeah.
Wanda don't even ride for Kevin Durant like
Not
that.
Not no more.
Yeah. Nobody, like, nobody rides for Kevin Durant like that. And, you know, that's got to be tricky. Now, we got a little bit of time left. I wanted to run something by you that I've been thinking about, right? Georgia, what's going on with the voting rights and the bill that they just passed and everything? And I saw that the Players Association and Major League Baseball has raised the question about whether or not they should have the All-Star game in Atlanta, which I thought was a bold move by the Players Association, given that a significant proportion of its membership is all good with the people who put in these measures that were down there. Mm-hmm. But this is what it got me to thinking about. And I want to know what you think about this. It is amazing how I feel like people don't understand what the things are that actually matter. And this is what I mean. When the Martin Luther King holiday came about, was it federally in what, 1983, I want to say? Not every state had a Martin Luther King holiday. And so in the early 90s, Phoenix was supposed to host a Super Bowl. Well, Tempe was going to be at Sun Devil Stadium, right? Mm-hmm. They were supposed to host a Super Bowl, but Arizona kept voting against having a Martin Luther King holiday. And basically, in an act of protest against the state of Arizona not doing that, the NFL, okay, they pulled the Super Bowl out of Phoenix. Yep.
Signed into law in 83, all 50 states for the first time in 2000.
Yeah, 2000, okay? So enough people looked at what they did in Arizona and were like, yo, that's kind of messed up. And they felt like taking away a Super Bowl was appropriate to show them that they will not tolerate racism. Hey, man, that Martin Luther King holiday is nice to have, but it don't really like make nothing. Don't really do anything. Or as my daddy put it, I took that holiday. But he ain't need nobody to tell him he couldn't come to work.
Right.
I took that. Like, we used to take the day off.
Right. We break.
Right. But in the end, it's a holiday, and you're right, it's symbolic.
Yeah.
This voting rights thing, this is real as penitentiary steel, and it is obviously very targeted in what they were doing. Like, mm-hmm. for people who don't know, in North Carolina, their legislature had passed a whole lot of stuff to change voting a few years ago, and it went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said that they use, quote, surgical precision, unquote, mm-hmm. to basically discriminate against Black people voting. These are the types of mechanisms that came in place in Jim Crow, and they came in place for a similar reason that the stuff in Jim Crow came around, which was Reconstruction, they started losing their grip and they're like, oh, we got to get it back. And so, like I said, in Georgia, when Georgia went blue, I was like, I know you don't think that they just going to be like, oh, well, you got us. Right. Like, no, they going to come up with something else. And so they come up with all these things like you can't even bring water to people waiting in line or whatever.
When we the only ones that wait in line.
Yeah, exactly. It's very clearly stuff intended to stop Black people from voting. But it's wild how you could get people to understand more clearly about a holiday and decide that we're not going to do nothing down there. I don't know if they know what to do with something that is like this. It's codified into law. Like, it has a lot of the same hallmarks, except the only difference is this one actually matters. Like, this one actually has a functional set of consequences that come after the fact. Like, this should be a no-brainer for Major League Baseball or anybody else, really.
Anybody else, man,
we ain't going. If the state of Georgia said we getting rid of the Martin Luther King holiday, they'd pull that All-Star game instantly.
Yeah.
Now, granted, in Georgia, they ain't going to do that. But, you know, but if they would, they would do that instantly if they pulled a holiday.
Yeah.
This, people going to really have to sit up and kind of think about it and kind of figure it out. Yeah, I don't know. There's going to be some hemming. There's going to be some hawing. And it just made me think of just how superficial sports leagues and organizations can really be about all these things, and that what people really just want them to be is superficial. Like, I always think about it with military stuff in the NFL, which I'm always, I get on them about this, right? Like, all your salute to service and all these things. I'm like, don't give me a salute to service, man. Tell me what you're doing for these boys that go over there and get their minds messed up and ruined and then come back and that they out here in these streets. Like, cheering them on while they out there destroying themselves is not what I want to hear about. Tell me what you're doing for the soldiers, the men and women, right? Tell me what you're doing for them rather than telling me about how you just kind of propping up the cause. And so if you don't get on board with the cheerleading, these leagues might do something to you. But if they do something that really matters, all of a sudden handcuffs.
I love the King comparison, and he's a perfect comparison because, you know, as we all know, over the years, he's been co-opted and made so mainstream until I think most of the people who were protective of that holiday or protecting a Dr. King's legacy probably don't even really know what he stood for, especially toward the end of his life. If a lot of the same people who come out to celebrate Martin Luther King for his holiday, if they actually knew what he fought and died for, that would probably be in conflict with some of their everyday beliefs. But it's just kind of easy to be like, oh, it's Martin Luther King. You know, he's just become this Santa Claus-like figure in America. Like, everybody loves Martin Luther King. Like, do you really love Martin Luther King? Well, if you do, it doesn't jive with how you're helping to live this dream that you believe that you knew that he had. You may not have known him as well as you think you do. Definitely love the King comparison. And in terms of Georgia, I guess it's fitting that we're talking about voting rights because this is the time for these people to really stand up and be counted. Like, it wasn't hard to put Black Lives Matter on your social media. It wasn't hard to, especially this summer, it wasn't hard to do a PSA or a commercial. If you're really serious about this thing, you got to hit them where it hurts. You got to hit them in the pocket. And I saw Arthur Blank actually made a statement. I don't know if the Hawks have said anything, but whether it's the All-Star game, whether it's the Masters, which I know I'm asking a lot, but whether it's the All-Star game, whether it's the Masters, anybody doing any business from Delta to Coca-Cola to anybody, it's like, if you're serious about this, now is the time for you to actually stand up and be counted if you're really about this so-called racial reckoning. Because you're right, the rest of it is all performative. The rest of it is really just, it's symbolic, it's easy, it's comfortable, it's convenient. This is something that is really going to tell you what they're really about, depending on what kind of actions they take or don't take, as the case may be.
Well, I also think that for a lot of these rich folks, they look at maneuvering around the rules as the game, right? Like, the game has a set of rules, and if whatever you do is within the construct of the game, they're like, okay, that's what it is. Except the thing is, they changing the rules just to say that they following them.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? They're changing the game and then saying, okay, it's cool because it's the game. But if it wasn't the game previously set up, then they would have been like, wait a minute, the game is being violated, but it's not about the actual action that right. It is that we are talking about. I saw Arthur Blank put out a statement. And of course, Arthur would. Arthur know who buy tickets, right? Like at his games.
Yeah.
Arthur knows what's going on. You might want to get out here and say that you don't stand behind this madness. Like, I think this might be a good idea for you. With the Braves, it'll be very, very interesting to see how they handle it because they shopping it to a different clientele. I really don't know who exactly it is that really give a damn about the Hawks.
Whether it's the corporations or the clientele, I guess it's also telling in that, you know, getting behind an MLK holiday, just to go back to that comparison, is that's one thing. It's like, but how many of them are actually in favor of this? How many of them are actually sitting there saying, yeah, damn right, this election was quote unquote stolen, which was always code, which was always a dog whistle. But it's like, how many of them are actually, like you said, upset? They weren't just going to sit back and take Georgia becoming blue or purple, whatever you want to call it, lying down. They were going to do something about it. Are people telling on themselves, whether they realize it or not? You know, I've said from the beginning, when you traffic in voter suppression, when you have stolen elections, a free and fair election feels like fraud to you. It feels like fraud to them because the game didn't work the way they set it up to work this time. You know, so now they got to go ahead and rig it a different way.
Problem I think that we have here is, even though this law feels very pointed and particular, you know, this is so all over the place. Like, think about this. This is something that I don't think that people really do the math on in this way. Somewhere between 90 and 95% of Black people vote blue.
Yeah, not about 90, yep.
Georgia is 32% Black. How could that state be all red? Just looking at that math right there. And that's the same with Mississippi, which is 35-36% black or somewhere in there. Texas is starting to change a little bit, but it's the same with Texas, where the black and brown populations are, like, you put them together, I think you're probably over 50% or somewhere in the neighborhood of that or whatever, which is to say that there's a measure of voter suppression that takes place everywhere. And it's been there for so long that people just kind of let it slide. And then they look up and they're like, oh, what happened? Right. And then Georgia, they're like, oh, hold on, guys, you're going too far. But this could happen everywhere. I think it's interesting that, like, the NCAA, they moved them championships out of South Carolina because of that damn flag, right? And this is the thing about the boycotts and something to keep in mind here. When South Carolina had the Confederate battle flag up at the Capitol.
Yep, yep.
Like, as an example, the NCAA said they wouldn't host any championships there.
Yep.
13 years later, somebody had to take the actual flag down for them in order to make it happen. Right. That's what it had to be in order to get it done. They weren't going to do that. And so I'm not exactly sure what level of money would have to be lost in order for them to go about changing this, and how long it would be before they just come up with something else. But in Mississippi, now, again, I don't think this actually affected anything, but the NCAA was ready to not have championships in Mississippi over the design of their state flag, and then suddenly everything changed. And that's how I know that the NCAA didn't do it, because I saw in South Carolina it took 13 years after they'd done it in the first place. But people will threaten over that symbolic stuff. You know, it almost makes me wonder if these people just don't, like, read the news and they're not smart enough to understand, like, the consequences of what we're discussing.
Yeah, no, it could be as simple as that. The symbolism is much more surface and much more easily, I guess, digestible. And it's an easier sell. This is the first substantive test when it comes to this moment that we're in right now. Like, everything else, whether it's flags, whether it's statues, whether it's PSAs, whether it's social media, even setting up stadiums as voting sites, all of that stuff looks good. But this is where the rubber is really meeting the road. And to see how far people are willing to go to push back is definitely going to be interesting. Yes, about the All-Star game, I'd love to see them pull it out of Atlanta. Will they?
We'll see. We will see. Yeah. But hey, man, that is Michael Smith. Check out Brother From Another, 3 to 5 on the Peacock Network.
3 to 5 on the Peacock Network. Yes, sir.
There we go. Check him out. You also see a friend of the right time, Vinny Goodwill, on there. He's on there once a week, right?
He is. He is. And maybe in the near future, maybe you could fall through.
Hey, man. You know, we shall see. We shall see how things go. But ladies and gentlemen, thanks so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this thing a couple times a week. Gabe Bassain and Tony Collette, you would handle everything behind the scene. Thank you, fellas. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.